You want a loving father? You want to be a member of this family? Then you're going to be affected not only by the Father's love for you, but you're going to accept the consequences of family membership, good or bad. You cannot escape wholeness relations any more than you can seek to, if you want to benefit by part relationships. Section 8, again, is not a discussion of energy. It is really a discussion, a philosophic appraisal of the three energies, matter, mind, and spirit. 139. And it's opened with one of the great and startling statements in these papers. God is spirit, but paradise is not. And then next to the last paragraph on page 140, they introduce what appears to be one of the basic themes in the Urantia papers, where in essence they say, out here in the evolutionary creations, energy matter is dominant, except in personality, where spirit, through the mediation of mind, is striving for the mastery. Here's the functional challenge. Here's what the papers offer as a substitute for the moral challenge that first appeared in Zoroastrianism, in the concept of the God of light and the God of darkness, and choose sides, you know, which we picked up through Judaism, and which in medieval Christianity, and that's synonymous with fundamentalist Christianity, you have is the challenge of God and the devil, you know, the alternate destination of heaven and hell. This challenge is just as real, but I don't get sick at my stomach when I read it, you know. You got a problem here. They've handicapped spirit out here in the seven super universes. By handicapping spirit, I mean they've established a situation in which energy matter starts out as dominant. Spirit cannot control energy matter. It doesn't reach it at any point. Spirit isn't even in space, is it? It's almost like being in two different universes. All throughout these papers, we're taught that the thing that can dominate energy matter is mind. All right, let's see what happens if mind dominates energy matter without spirit coordination. We get into the kind of a bind that we are in right now here on Earth. Man's mind is beginning to unlock some important secrets of nature. But the minds that are doing the unlocking are not God-knowing minds, are they? So what we're face-to-face with is not utopia, but fear. Here we have mind dominating energy matter, but it's not subordinating itself to spirit. So all of our scientific discoveries increase our apprehensions. You ever stop and think of what a temporary condition Los Angeles might be? I look at Chicago. I was born there. I love that dirty city. I managed to stay mostly on the lake shore where it isn't so dirty. It's the white meat of Chicago. And I've looked out of my office many times at Michigan Avenue, north and south, and I said to myself, golly, we've been 125 years building this city, and the whole thing could go up in smoke in 125 seconds. This is for real. This is not science fiction. It's only when you have a personality that you've got freedom of choice, so that the choosing personality can move in two directions at the same time. One, use mind to dominate matter, and at the same time stabilize mind by subordinating it to spirit. And it's my humble opinion that human beings on this world will successively build civilizations and will successively smash them until human beings learn that subtle trick. No civilization, I think, will be permanent which does not have a religious motif, which at minimum contains the gospel of Jesus. And I offer our present day dilemma as a good example of how loused up we can get. Who was it once said, you couldn't build modern civilization on the teachings of Jesus, and they're quite right, but you could build a darn sight better one. If I sound a little pessimistic, forgive me, but I've just been carefully studying. I got into this in my reading. The last 300 years of the Roman Empire in the West. I'm reading it in detail. You know, I got about yay much book on just those 300 years. And how hard those Romans fought. And you can just see the old tide rising on them, you know. Generation by generation. And they went down slugging hard. They didn't give up easy. Well, I sound like Jeremiah, don't I? In the 20th century, though, we don't have any miry pits in Pasadena. They conclude with a very interesting differentiation between fact and truth. When they say, matter, mind, matter, and spirit are equally real, but they are not of equal value to personality in the attainment of divinity. Consciousness of divinity is a progressive spiritual experience. And so, your Greek figure of speech, the material as the shadow of the more real spirit substance, does have a philosophic significance. I think some of the best philosophy in these papers is in the tail end of paper 12. The front end is geographic, the tail end philosophical, and they introduce some very important themes. How about a coffee break? It'll eventually sprout into the whole master universe. And how can you understand that? How can you comprehend a seed until it's planted and you see how it flowers? And some of these seeds are not going to be planted in the present universe age. They're very mysterious. Yes?
Bill, could you briefly review the zero and the first and second universe age? Just a quick...
No, I can't. I can't. We spent 2.5 days going through that. But you all know what the master universe is. It's Havana, the 7 super universes, and the 4 outer space levels. And I will briefly review magnitudes. Julia has got my write-up. I wrote this out formally because I thought it might help you. And please, when you read it, this is my thinking. I touch base many, many times in the papers, but I am responsible for these conclusions. This is no divine counselor writing. So get your salt shaker out while you read it and salt each page with skepticism. I like it because it explains a lot to me. But one of the things we did was to examine what appears to be relative size. And I won't give you my argument. You can read it. I just take the light years they give in the papers and work out some proportions. If we could symbolize the grand universe, now that's what this book is about, the grand universe, the seven super universes in Havona. If we could symbolize that as a tennis ball for size, I know it's a donut, but it's easier for me to refer to spheres than it is to concentric donuts. I want a tennis ball of about 2 inches in diameter. If you will float that tennis ball in a small bedroom, 8 cubic feet, you are thinking of what seems to be the space relationship of the grand universe to the first outer space level. It's a lot bigger, isn't it? Now float the bedroom in a cubic city block, and you got the second outer space level. Float the cubic city block in what I referred to as cubic Chicago. It's a 16-mile cube. You got the third outer space level. And now float a cubic city in the Earth's moon, which is undersized. Oh, I should have a space body half again as big. Now you have the fourth outer space level. That's for the size of the master universe. And we also observed that each one of these units, starting with Havona, is associated with the universe age. We're in the second universe age. Now, these 21 spheres embrace the potentials of the entire master universe in seed form. And this means that these worlds are not going to be really comprehensible until the whole master universe has appeared, right? For example, where would you expect to find creator suns? On Vice Charrington. But they aren't in this universe age. They're on Sun Arrington. But they've got a secret college on Vice Charrington. Why are the universe power directors based on Spiritington, the world of the Father and the Spirit? Father have anything to do with their origin? No. But the paper says in the present universe age, he has something to do with their direction. Citizenship or residence on these worlds apparently is going to shift as the successive universe ages witness the unfolding of the creative potentials in the master universe. The author where the devil does he say this? Yes. Page 148, paragraph 5. He goes on to say, there are many similar problems that will perplex you, nor can you successfully reason out these questions. You know so little. And if you knew more about the Father's worlds, you would simply encounter more difficulties until you knew all about them. But they point out that these worlds are worlds of specialized relationship. The gods make no secret of themselves. In other words, you understand all of the Father that you can. But the gods do not share with all creatures certain intimacies which they maintain with other orders. I like that. And you know, the thing that makes that very bearable is there's one relationship that we have that's unique with ascenders, and we don't share that with non-ascenders. We'll never understand how a paradise son bestows himself. But the author of this paper says he will never understand how a human being evolves a soul and fuses with a thought adjuster. And that's something that will be crystal clear to us because we will have lived through it. But he says, for some reason, once you understand it, you either keep the secret because you've been told to, or you keep the secret because you can't disclose it. The worlds of the sun are extremely interesting because we know nothing about them. People don't live there. Living beings reside there, but they're not persons. And that has something to do with the master universe. The worlds of the spirit, I think, must be just fascinating. You know how big our Vantan is? Well, the world number 7 in the third circuit of Paradise Satellites, the name of that world is our Vantan. The super universe was named after it. Here's where they keep things straight for a whole super universe. And you know, the perfecter of wisdom that writes this paper says, to me, these executive worlds are the most interesting and intriguing spots outside of paradise. In no other place in the wide universe can one observe such varied activities involving so many different orders of living beings, having to do with operations on so many diverse levels, occupations at once material, intellectual, and spiritual. Nowhere else can I observe such an amazing interassociation of personality performances on all 7 levels of universe reality, and I'm always stimulated by the activities of those who well know how to do their work and who so thoroughly enjoy doing it. They got a bunch of pros up there. They're really good. To get a feel for this, let's pick up a couple of cross-references. Number one, page 321, paragraph 2 and 3, discusses the function of the Supreme Center Supervisors. You'll recall that the 7 Supreme Power Directors are based on peripheral paradise, each in association with the Master Spirit of Origin. There are 7 Supreme Center Supervisors. They're the senior power centers, and they're based on these worlds of the Infinite Spirit, sometimes called the worlds of the Supreme Executives. Cross-reference number 2. Page 265. The entire section that starts at the top of that page. You'll see, page 265, section 1. The Universe Circuit Supervisors. Now, this is the second group of the higher personalities of the Infinite Spirit. And these folks have to do with all circuits which can be manipulated by creatures and which are not manipulated by the power directors. And the Supreme Circuit Supervisors are based on these same 7 worlds. And the liaison between a Supreme Circuit Supervisor and the first order of the power centers based there effects a complete coordination of all circuits to the 7 super universes. Everything crosses over at this point. I'll tell you what I think of. Again, I think in terms of organic wholes. I think of this as analogous to the great neural crossover in the medulla of the brain. You know, your left hemisphere controls the right side of the body, and vice versa. And every neural pattern, every nerve, makes a big crossover right back here in the base of the brain, and that produces coordination. I think of this circuit tie-up on the worlds of the infinite spirit as somewhat analogous to the crossover of the human nervous system. It produces super-universe coordination. The third cross-reference should be page 198, section 1, the seven supreme executives. There are seven of these, and they're resident on these worlds. What's the relationship between the supreme executive of Orvantan and the three ancients of days? Well, I think of it in many ways as the relationship between the chairman of the board and a triune president. The three ancients of days are in active supervision of Orvantan, but they're accountable to this supreme executive, who you might say is the executive deputy of the master spirit of Orvantan. Paper 14 is, as many of these papers are, it's really written in two sections. Section 1 and Section 2 continues the physical story. We're on page 152. We're going to find this was true of the paper on paradise, of the paper on the universe of universes. We'll find this to be true of the next paper on the seven super universes. The first part of the paper is physical. The last part is a discussion of something other than physical. But to get a picture of Havana, you read the first two sections. And remember, Havana is made of material stuff, but not the same material stuff that we call matter. Our matter, the papers describe as gravita. Havana matter is triata. It's differently organized. Starting with section 3, you have a description of what goes on in Havana. This is analogous to the first half of the paper on paradise, what goes on paradise, where people are concerned. I love that first statement. Concerning the government of the central universe, there is none. Here you should cross-reference in this discussion of Havana. You should first of all pick up, let me see, page 221, Havana Natives. Page 346, Havana Natives in the Core of the Finality. Page 288, through the rest of the paper, which is 288 to 296. That's the story of the tertiary supernafim who function generally in Havona, and the story of the secondary supernafim, which gives the story of our progress circuit by circuit through Havona. You should read 269 to the end of the paper. Graduate guides, because a graduate guide goes with us all the way through Havona. 273 is the last reference. With this graduate guide is a Havona servital. And if you put all this together, you've got the story of Havona as it relates to us. Let's look at page 156, the bottom of the page. Consider that inventory of life in Havona. These Havona natives are material beings, at least on the outer circuits. Material in the triada sense, you know? But read down that list. There's an awful lot going on in Havona that isn't described in this paper on Havona, and which I don't think will even register on our sensory mechanism when we go through Havona. Let's go back to page 86, and incidentally, that's a good cross-reference for Havona. Next to the last paragraph. It says the Eternal Son bestowed himself 7 times, once on each of the circuits of Havona. And on page 87, at the top of the page, it says, we can't tell you anything about this. These bestowals were transcendental. And on the second paragraph, they point out that it took a Creator Son following the Eternal Son to portray what the Eternal Son had done in Havona. These were the 7 bestowals of the original Michael. He's different from any other Michael. He never bestowed himself out in time and space. But what he did was, he revealed what the Eternal Son had done. Well, if what the Eternal Son had done was transcendental, this was a finite translation of a transcendental episode. I don't think we're going to understand the bestowals of the Eternal Son when we get to Havona. I think we will understand the Michael translation of the bestowals of the Eternal Son. I think most of what this paper is talking about deals with the first 3 levels of Havona life. I don't think it touches on the last 4 levels.
Do you mean surface by that when you say level?
No. I think all 7 of these levels of existence are existent on all 7 circuits. But I don't think we'll know it, Helena. Here, we live on this world, and we're cognizant of the physical level of reality on this world. But there's much that's going on this world of a superphysical nature. For example, our midway cousins are evolving a midwayer civilization on this world. which has cultural values. They're not all alike. I think they make physical discoveries. I think they achieve artistic triumphs. This is an evolutionary civilization indigenous to this planet. And it's a very important civilization. Sometime, when human civilization achieves the status of light and life, the midway civilization will flow into it. Example, part 4 in this book, the Jesus Papers, represents the midwayers sharing with us something which they have retained, which we didn't know about. But we don't know anything about this midwayer civilization, do we? And then there are higher orders of beings on this planet. I think the same thing is going to be true when we go through Havona. We're going to see, we're going to perceive many things. But I think there's a great deal more going on there that won't even register on us. If you'll turn to page 160, the perfecter of wisdom hedges a little bit. He roughly groups things that go on Havana on three levels. And he says, it is possible that the central universe serves many purposes which are not revealed to me. You see, what we've got here is a universe that at least in part expresses absolute quality of divinity. And then he goes on, this merits some study. What does Havona mean to seven different orders of intelligence? The Father, the Son, the Spirit. What does Havona mean to the Supreme Being? What does Havona mean to the Creator Sons? What does Havona mean to their creative consorts? And what does Havona mean to evolutionary mortals? I love that statement at the top of page 163. Paradise is Havona, is the home, and Havona the workshop and playground of the finaliters. I'm glad they put playground in there along with workshop. Because, you know, if they ever evolve me beyond the point where I get a kick out of having a good time, it won't be me anymore. I think work is valuable. It's real fun. One of the most important functions of work is that it offers a contrast to play. And if all you did was play, play wouldn't be fun anymore, would it? They point out that Havona works very beautifully in relation to a finite scheme of ascension. They point out that it has capacity to serve equally well if ascenders ever attempt to approach God on the second level of reality, on the absonite level. And the last sentence, and we are inclined to the opinion that the potentials of eternal Havona are really unlimited, that the central universe has eternal capacity to serve as an experiential training universe for all past, present, or future types of created beings. Well, if the potentials of Havona are unlimited, it's a cinch that they won't all be expressed in the present universe age, nor will they all be discernible to us as we traverse it in the present universe age.
Bill, will you briefly, in your tell when the second universe age will end?
Sure. The first universe age, I think, ended when the 21 Ancients of Days were created. They tell us that's the first event in recorded history. And in principle, this began the seven superuniverses. And we are in the second universe age. I think our universe age will end when the seven superuniverses are settled in light and life, which event they think will witness the completion of the growth of the Supreme and his emergence, the emergence of the Supreme as a contactable and knowable experiential deity. That will end, I think, the present universe age, and I deduce will begin the next one.
Do we have any idea how many planets are settled in life?
No. No indication. We can get some indication, Dorothy. At the end of the paper we're about to consider, I think, let me see. Look on page 182.
182.
Mm-hmm, last paragraph. Pick up that big number, which is roughly 5 1/3 trillion. We know that the plans for the seven superuniverses project 7 trillion inhabited worlds. And I would deduce that 5 1/3 trillion worlds are now inhabited. So we've got 1 2/3 trillion worlds on which life has yet to evolve, maybe even be planted.
Not even evolved, actually.
Yeah.
And the whole seven segments have to be settled in life like before the emergence of this.
Right. Now we're included in this number. Mm-hmm. But how close are we to light and life? How utopian is this planet?
Yeah,
I'll tell you exactly what I think of this planet. It's my very considered opinion that historians will sometime describe the 20th century as the later stages of barbarism. I do not believe we have achieved what a more sophisticated and mature culture will deem to be civilization. I think that they will describe the mid-20th century as the beginning of the breakthrough to the development of the tools of civilization. I think atomic energy is I get respect for that. This is the tool of a fairly high civilization. But morally, ethically, and religiously, I rate us in the later days of barbarism. And if you would like me to buttress this, let me read you the indictment of Western civilization from the Urantia book. I think I have excellent warrant for this opinion. Here is their description of Western civilization. 2086, next to the last paragraph. A society which staggers under the guilt of tolerating science without idealism, politics without principles, wealth without work, pleasure without restraint, knowledge without character, power without conscience, and industry without morality. This is a real indictment. No, it's my very considered opinion that we are living in the later days of barbarism. Please remember, in the 12th century A.D., which we call the Middle Ages, the inhabitants of Western Europe referred to themselves as moderns. This was the modern age. Each generation of living men suffers from that conceit. I think the world has evolved civilized people. I think individual human beings have become civilized. But I do not believe this world has yet seen a really civilized society.
It's only produced the yeast.
Right. I think, yes.
Would you mind digressing for just a moment again, Bill? And is there any place in the papers that refers to Atlantis and Lemuria or something like that?
Yes. I'll give you what appears to be the origin of the tradition of Atlantis. I think I can find this. Now you make me jump like a Mexican jumping bean from Havona to the history of Urantia. Tingling, tingling. Now let me see. Trouble with these darn papers. The thing can be in more than one place. Yeah, we'll pick it up on page 889. They're talking about the early migration of the Adamites, western direction into Europe. Fourth paragraph. In the eastern trough of the Mediterranean. Yes. Third paragraph. The Mediterranean trough was projected by the Gibraltar Isthmus and the Sicilian land bridge. Some of man's very early maritime commerce was established on these inland lakes, where blue men from the north and Saharans from the south met Nodites and Adamites from the east. In the eastern trough, this is below sea level, in the eastern trough of the Mediterranean, the Nodites had established one of their most extensive cultures, and from these centers it penetrated somewhat. On page 890, last paragraph, we're shifting now several, about roughly 10,000 years closer to the present time. About the time of these climatic changes in Africa, England separated from the continent, Denmark arose from the sea, while the Isthmus of Gibraltar, protecting the western Mediterranean, gave way as the result of an earthquake, quickly raising this inland lake to the level of the Atlantic Ocean. Presently, the Sicilian land bridge submerged, creating one sea of the Mediterranean and connecting it with the Atlantic Ocean. I think it is the tradition of that flooding and of the destruction of that early center of civilization that gave rise to the legends of Atlantis. That was the great flood. The flood that is referred to in the Bible was much more local and was a river flood in Mesopotamia which destroyed the second Adamic center. And maybe these two floods got mixed up one with the other. That, to me, is the Atlantean tradition, in fact. The papers do not validate any mid-Atlantic continent, neither do they validate, there's a little bit of mu in here, too. They have, I think I can find this. Dear, dear, dear. I'm looking for Easter Island. I'm not going to find it. They make a point that the mixed Andites did.
I think it's 873 there.
What's that?
I think it's 873.
Mm, good.
Yeah,
good for you, Dorothy.
Thanks.
Yes, you're right. 873, paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4. They did get into the Pacific Islands, and one boatload made it all the way across to South America. And the islands of the Polynesian group were both more numerous and larger then than now. Easter Island was long a religious and administrative center of one of these lost groups. There never was a continent of Mu, but there was more landmass down there. Does that answer your question?
Uh-huh.
There's usually a germ of truth or fact in most legends. The paper on the seven superuniverses completes the first story of things physical. And again, this paper is divided. If I'd been writing this paper, I'd have split it in two. And I would have split it at either section 9 or section 10. The first eight sections deal very definitely with physical things. And the last half of this paper deals with who rules the super universe. Me. How does this reflectivity operate? Well, seven dissimilar reflective spirits are stationed at the capital of every superuniverse. And they must be rather peculiar beings, because even the Ancients of Days can't do business with them. So each of these reflective spirits creates an image aid, a reflective image aid. And these beings are non-volitional beings. They're images. The Ancients of Days can do business with these image aids, who must intervene between even Trinity origin beings and these reflective spirits. And when the three Ancients of Days parade the seven image aids on Universa, they are looking at the seven master spirits on paradise. They know exactly the attitude of these seven master spirits. This is one way in which, from their midpoint in the cosmos, they can look both ways. The Ancients of Days can't move, at least for the present universe age. They don't have to move. All of the intelligence circuits necessary converge on the superuniverse capitals. Now, I made the statement that the Ancients of Days can look both ways, which means know both ways. But so far, we've only seen how they look in. Now, we need to cross-reference some things. wherever you're putting in your cross-references on reflectivity, add this one. 307. Section 4. Read the story of reflectivity as told in the last paper on the infinite spirit. I read about Majestan, I'd read about the reflective spirits and the reflective image aids. And then I'd come over here and read the story of the primary Sakanafim. Because these are the angelic children of the reflective spirits, and they embody reflective power. And they serve the Ancients of Days. The primary Sakanafim of assignment to the Ancients of Days are living mirrors in the service of these triune rulers. Think what it means in the economy of the super universe to be able to turn, as it were, to a living mirror, and therein to see and therewith to hear the certain responses of another being, a thousand, or 100,000 light years distant, and to do all this instantly and unerringly. And as they point out, this evidence is unimpeachable because it's given unconsciously. The higher orders of beings can tell when they're being reflected, but they can't tell what's being reflected. And if you can get unconscious testimony, it's free from bias, isn't it? All right, who do they reflect? There are seven groups of these primary Sakanafim. Group one is reflective of the conjoint actor. Group two, of the seven master spirits. You might say, why? You already got your image aids. Ah, but this is a collective portraiture of the master spirits, not an individual portraiture. Group three, the creator sons. I can find out what any creator son is thinking about. Group four, the angelic hosts. Five, broadcast receivers. Six, transporter, seven of the reserve corps. Listen, I think there are a lot more reflective spirits than that who are primary Sakanafim. I think here is a good example of where these papers give us a sampling. I don't think they've told us all about all of the primary Sakanafim. I shouldn't be surprised, but what, there were 49 different kinds of primary Sakanafim able to reflectivate selectively. But they've told us enough about the primary Sakanafim to give us a feeling. The whole story of the Sakanafim, primary, secondary, and tertiary, is in measure the story of reflectivity. They're information gatherers. They are information and propaganda disseminators, and they operate by reflectivity. You should cross-reference also page 1272, which discusses reflectivity, the master spirits and the reflective spirits, somewhat more directly in relation to the Supreme Being. Page 1272. It's most of the page. Consider how this reflectivity operates from another standpoint. You go over, consider on page 275 the origin of the universal conciliators. You'll recall that in the preceding section it discusses the origin of the Havona servitals. And these servitals are the joint creation of the seven supreme power directors and of the seven master spirits, which represents the first union of physical-like creators with spiritual-like creators. And thereby hangs the tale of the Mendelian law of inheritance. And we'll just put that on the table and come right back to it when we finished considering this thing from the standpoint of reflectivity. Now, every time the seven master spirits participate in the creation of servitals, the reflective spirits are involved because they reflect these master spirits. Let's say that master spirit number one participates in the creation of Havona servitals. Then every reflective spirit of the first order, one on each superuniverse capital, will produce just as many universal conciliators as there were servitals produced in Havona, which means seven times as many in the overall. The same thing applies with each of the other master spirits. Yes. So let's just consider our Vantan. We've got seven different kinds of reflective spirits in our Vantan on Yuversa, each reflecting a different natured master spirit. Sooner or later, in the course of time, we're going to get seven basically different types of universal conciliators in our Vantan, aren't we? Does this follow? Some will be like Master Spirit number one, others will be like Master Spirit number four, others like Master Spirit number seven. We get seven genetically different types of conciliators based on the seven master spirits. And they work and they serve in our Vantan. These seven different types of conciliators all come under the permanent influence of master spirit number seven. Here you have an interesting interaction of heredity and environment. So they are seven different types of conciliators, but they all have a seventh order environment. And since this is happening in each of the other six superuniverses, what is finally evolved is 49 different types of conciliators. And the papers have this to say. Where does it say it? Page 275, paragraph 4. The effect of such an environment upon evolutionary growth is so profound that, in their post-superuniverse careers, the conciliators collectively manifest 49 experiential viewpoints or insights, each angular, hence incomplete, but all mutually compensatory, and together, tending to encompass the circle of supremacy. Let's leave Mendelian ratios for the moment and go back to the supreme spirit groups. Are you satisfied about reflectivity in Machestan?
Yes.
Do you feel that your ignorance is adequately unified? I don't think we're going to have much to do with Majestan on Paradise, do you?
No.
Ancients of Days don't deal directly with the reflective spirits.
Yeah.
come down the line, we talked about the reflective image aids. The circuit spirits coordinate circuit activity in Havona, as the Eternals of Days coordinate activity on the individual planets. These circuit spirits are not persons, and they give rise to adjutant mind of a 12-fold nature, which is evidently the mind of Havona natives. And while the circuit spirits aren't personal, they're still capable of functioning as the creators of the very personal tertiary supernatum, who function generally in Havona. The last two groups, the local universe creative spirits and the adjutant mind spirits, function on the local universe level. Here is the only place in the Urantia book that you find a specific chronological delineation of the career of a creative spirit. This obviously should be read in conjunction with and as an introduction to paper 34, The Local Universe Mother Spirit. We discussed the evolution of creative spirits the other day and pointed out that it was at right angles to the evolution of creator sons. The son, the creator son, is always a person. And his evolution is the experiential descent from paradise to human levels by bestowal. The creative spirit, however, does not start out as a personality. Her evolutionary growth is lateral from the impersonal to the personal. The two of them together have experienced about every form of growth experienceable. Where do you want to cross-reference the adjutant mind spirits, here or later on?
Are you referring
to? Pick up the adjutant mind spirits. You want to pick it up now in this connection? Or you got to do some chasing? They don't say much here. 378, paragraph 5. Page 379, paragraph 3, 4, and 5. That's the discussion of the adjutant mind spirits in connection with the paper on the local universe mother spirit. And then page 401, section 5. Here they're talking about, here's the longest discussion of the seven adjutant mind spirits. And they're discussing them in connection with their central emplacement on the life carrier worlds, on one of the life carrier worlds in the near regions of Salvington. Here they give a full-blown discussion of intuition, understanding, courage, knowledge, counsel, worship, and wisdom. That's page 401, section 5. It's the whole section. Then there's another interesting discussion of the adjutant mind spirits in connection with this world. Section 6, The Evolution of the Human Mind. Here they're talking about the successive function of the adjutants as evolution gradually articulated more and more complex organisms until they witness the first function of the spirit of worship. Incidentally, and is this characteristic, Fonte got it a little before Andon. I think women are basically more worshipful critters than men. And then, the spirit of wisdom. Hmm. 138, section 7, evolutionary mind levels. This is the life carrier's overview of the function of mind in relation to evolution. There's one cross-reference I've missed, though, darn it. Well, you don't know what I missed, so I won't tell you. There's the full-dress discussion of the adjutant mind spirits. If you want a general appraisal of the Supreme Spirits, I like the conclusion here of paper 17 on page 205. And as you study this, you find that they're just all over everywhere. They're the activity, they're the infinite spirit in action, you might say, on sub-absolute levels. This brings us to the second group of personalities discussed in the papers. And we pretty well talked about the content of paper 18 because we've encountered the Trinitized secrets of supremacy on the Father's worlds. We've encountered the Eternals of Days on the worlds of Havona, the Ancients of Days on the Superuniverse capitals, the Perfections of Days on the Major Sector capitals, the Recents of Days on the Minor Sector capitals. And here they stop functioning as rulers. The last two groups are ambassadors, the Unions of Days, Trinity ambassadors to the local universe capitals, and the Faithfuls of Days, Trinity ambassadors to the constellations. Are the systems left unguarded? No. The systems have assigned sentinels in observation, representing the supreme executives, as they also have associate inspectors resident on the capitals of the local creations. You'll recall that we encountered these seven orders also in paper 10, because they're the first seven members of the stationary sons of the Trinity. They're concerned with justice, among other things. When we deal with the next paper, 19. I think we have here a composite paper. To me, paper 18 has a certain coherence that suggests we may know pretty much what there is to be known. I don't have that feeling about paper 19. I think paper 19 is the scotch taping together of several fragments. If you feel like it, turn to page 214 and look at that list of the seven orders described in these paper, in this paper. If you feel like it, draw a line between 1 and 2. Draw another line between 4 and 5. Draw yet another line between 5 and 6. This is where I think I detect the seams in this paper. Here is the Scotch tape. You see, Trinity teacher sons are hard to classify. They're Trinity origin beings, but they're also classified with sons. They're teachers. The next group of three affiliates very tightly with the seven groups discussed in the preceding paper. And these three plus those seven are the ten orders of the stationary sons of the Trinity discussed in paper 10 on the Paradise Trinity. Perfectors of wisdom, divine counselors, and universal censors are the high associates of the superuniverse executives. You'll recall that a perfecter of wisdom is the I was aspect of deity. A counselor, the I will be, and the censor, the I am. You might make a note to associate with these three in your reading three of the Trinitized sons of God. Mighty Mess, page 245 and 6. Mighty messengers, those high in authority, those without name and number. These are Trinitized, adjuster-fused ex-finaliters. They also function in the administration of justice. They are the experiential associates of the perfectors of wisdom, the divine counselors, and the universal censors. Now when we get to the next order, inspired Trinity spirits, it's not like anything else in the paper. These inspired Trinity spirits are people that are pretty hard to know, even by Trinity origin beings. The author of this paper, a divine counselor, has this to say about them. Cease my efforts to solve the mystery of the isolation of these spirits belonging to my order of creation. The inspired Trinity spirits may be related to the Trinity teacher sons. The Trinity teacher sons, among other functions, are devoted to the conscious enlightenment of the inhabitants of the grand universe. The author of this paper expresses the belief that the inspired Trinity spirits are devoted to the unconscious enlightenment of the inhabitants of the grand universe, and he offers evidence.